Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Energy Speaks Back, powered by B2B Energy. My name is Paul Webb. I'm the founder of B2B Energy, and I'm your host. And weekly, I present to you energy experts from around the world. Welcome to episode 135. And our purpose, as always, is to provide a good understanding of energy management knowledge from around the world, which is available today for us to deliver savings that impact on our planet. We would like to thank utility people who are creating a better career and future for people in our industry, and Esther Energy, who are our certificate partners. Welcome, energy enthusiasts, to another enlightening episode of Energy Speaks Back. Today's guest is an experienced business development leader with a wide range experience of success across public and private sector. He will be sharing today his insights into the energy management industry. So without any further ado, let's dive into this conversation with Andy Bray.
Good evening, Andy. How are you today?
I'm very good, Paul. How are you doing? It's a bit wet and windy where I am, but hopefully it's slightly better where you are.
We've had the rain, definitely. It's been very, very grey. It's not been a good day for solar today, if you've got solar on your roof. Whereabouts are you currently?
I'm on the way down to the office in Andover, so I'm just staying in a hotel this evening.
Right, and where do you live?
I usually live in Harrogate, so it's a bit of a drive down.
Wow.
Today.
That is a long drive.
Yeah, no, it's good. About 3.5 hours or something, so it's not too bad. It's not too bad.
Have you always lived in the area?
Yeah, well, I'm from Yorkshire originally. But I think for quite a few years I've sort of moved around everywhere. I think when I started in energy I was down in London, but I'm a Yorkshireman originally and very proud of it. So moved to Harrogate 18 years ago. So very nice place yeah. To be. So if you like afternoon tea, then I think Harrogate's definitely the place for you.
It's famous for water, isn't it?
Yeah, there's Harrogate Spa Water. Yeah, no, that's doing incredibly well. I keep saying to my son, it isn't like Harrogate, unfortunately.
I've seen the bottles all over the world.
Yeah, no, they're doing incredibly well. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And I know that you go to London, and we've just found out we met at EMEX recently, and I was looking at you trying to work out where I've seen you. And bizarrely, you interviewed me back in 2005 for a prestige job that I didn't take with Johnson's. And now you told me about the job, and I'm thinking, was that one of them sliding door things where a missed opportunity?
Yeah, I think
we don't know, do we?
You'll never know. I think that was the time. I think I was started at Johnson Controls to establish energy management as a service offering for their FM business. So, yeah, we were doing really well. I think it was a good opportunity, but there we are. It's one of those things, Paul.
Would I be sitting here now interviewing you if I'd taken that job? Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows? No, we did really well as a team. We won some interesting contracts. I think, people like GSK, BP, BBC, who else did we start working for? IBM. You know, there's quite a few sort of big organizations we worked for at the time. But it's a small world, energy. If you don't know somebody, you know somebody who knows somebody.
Yeah, exactly. So, Andy, obviously, we know each other in the past, and we know probably many, many people. In fact, we were standing on stand, we knew people who each other. So I know about yourself, but for the benefit of our audience today, can you please give us some background into your story, possibly your origin story as well?
Yeah, sure. I've been in energy. I think it's 25 years this year, almost exactly to the day, which is quite scary. So I joined when the sort of residential market was really starting to open up. So the days of people going around the doors, banging on people's houses, trying to persuade people to change, and all the stories and the shenanigans of some of the activities that went on. I think when I started, it was the Big Six, and I think we've now gone back to the Big Six in a slightly different form around the piece. But it's been an interesting change in energy. So I've worked for a couple of suppliers, a couple of FM businesses, but the last 10 years or so have been in around the sort of software piece for energy. So work for companies like SSE and Elster, and started a couple of months ago working for Viewpoint Solutions. So been an interesting 25 years, quite a few changes. I think there's a few more changes to come, but I've got to say I've enjoyed the energy space. It's been good.
Yeah. Well, so I've been in the industry. So I started in the industry when I left school 43 years ago. So I've got a little bit of years on you as such. But there's obviously, I feel that I really started in the industry 2005, which is when we met.
Yep.
What do you think has been like the turning points regarding the industry during that time? Has there been some key moments in that time, do you think?
I think it's changed the number of people who were there. I think at the time, most of the focus was on energy supply. I think, you know, it was really just people competing on that side. I think the growth in services, the growth in more products and technology to help people be more energy efficient, it was great. I think when I started, the idea of a big supplier also having a energy services business would have been, you know, you wouldn't really have believed that as being credible. But I think now, you know, again, look at some of the suppliers, they've got some very good offerings, I think, you know. But again, some of the technologies, some of the software that is now available, you know, certainly none of that was around. I think there's a lot more to do. I think there's some very good beacons of organizations doing a fantastic job around the energy space. I think there are some people who are still dragging their heels somewhat, I think, around it, and maybe doing a bit of, oh great, we've saved, you know, a bit of money, let's spin it as a massive green story in terms of the carbon. But I think, yeah, I think there's been some good changes. I think there's been still some frustrations. I don't think we've got a joined up energy policy at a national level. Again, I think that's often focused too much on the supply side around the piece. I think the fact that energy ministers seem to change every 2 minutes, we're never not quite sure who it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's too important to leave as a starting role. You know, energy runs everything in the UK. You know, without power, you know, we don't have offices, we don't have shops. But I think it's been, you know, a fun 25 years, but I think there's a lot more a lot more we could do. But you know, when you see on things like LinkedIn some of the success stories, it does make you think, yeah, okay, there are people out there who get it. It's great.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the suppliers getting more involved with it. Do you sometimes think that the supplier's got a conflict of interest because the supplier wants you to buy their energy, don't they? But they don't want you to save the energy. So there's a little bit of conflict, isn't there, regarding that? Do you think that's still there? It used to be there, I think, many years ago.
I think maybe there was a perception, but the reality is, I think, you know, margins on supply contracts are still not huge. So I think where, you know, people are sort of quite rightly trying to look at other sort of margins to do it. I mean, look at one of my previous companies, SSE. Again, they're a very big supply business, but they are, I think at a macro level, they've got a great drive to get into batteries, to renewables, to PV, and yeah, to provide the funding around that space. So I think, I think the suppliers who don't have the energy services offering, I think aren't in a stronger position. But I think there are some organizations really driving the green agenda. As I said earlier, I think there are some who are paying it a bit of lip service, I think, around the piece. But I think for, you know, most suppliers, I think, no, they have to have something more than just procurement. But that also impacts on TPIs and brokers. I know a lot of their revenue is still around the annual, can you get me a better price? But again, there are some very good TPIs and brokers out there trying to expand their services just beyond the annual procurement space.
Yeah. And I think in the early days of that, the TPI approach was a little bit lip service, but I met with quite a few TPIs on the stand at EMEX, and there was a lot of drive, you know, looking for people to join them. They're looking for partners and things, so it's becoming more and more, and I think they've got no choice because they've got legislation coming around the corner to make them price correctly and be more visible to the marketplace as well. Transparent is the right word, I suppose.
I think there again, yeah, I guess in all industries there are some very good TPIs and brokers. I think the last couple of years there's been ones who've been somewhat naughty in some of their sort of pricing schemes, but hopefully they've been found out. And I think, yeah, I think the key thing is transparency. You know, if you're going to charge somebody your services, you need to be very clear as to what it is. And if you're very clear as to what it is and somebody's happy with that, then that's fine. I think some of the smoke and mirrors hasn't been good for those, you know, really good people out there who are trying to provide a decent service. But I think maybe on occasions, come back to the energy thing, I think maybe at a national level, we've been a bit lax in some legislation. I'm never somebody desperately wants too many rules and regulations, but I think, you know, some of the practices that have gone on and some of the people who've been caught recently, I won't sort of mention any names just in case this goes out. I think, you know, some of that with a stronger regulation perhaps could have been picked up earlier.
Yeah. Now, my reason for asking that question, for me, one of the driving points and the changes I've seen in, you know, when I first look back or when I first started to sell energy services and that approach, it was very hard because you couldn't touch it, couldn't see it as such. Who wanted it? Well, you know, I'm making all this money here on their products. Why do I need to be saving the money? Yep. So there wasn't really that need. Then they started to bring in legislation, and I think legislation has started to drive, been driving. So we had the carbon CRC, carbon reduction commitment, which I thought was a really great scheme, but they dwindled it out. It disappeared. And I thought that started off even more fancier because there was going to be some sort of scorecard approach where it was like a game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you demonstrated more savings, you was going to get more and so on. That went, and then that got replaced by SECRA, which is good because that made it an annual thing. I think that's a really positive. And then they brought out ESOS, which was great. Phase one, not so good, but I think we was all learning as individuals. I'm an ESOS lead assessor, and I felt the pain of trying to learn and trying to develop that. Then we had in phase two, I got audited a lot on phase one. So phase two become a lot easier because where we got audited, we had to bring the audit into phase two. Phase three, great start, but all of a sudden it's gone into a brick wall because the government hadn't signed it off. There's all these changes. And now we've got our eyes set on net zero. So we've got all this legislation. I think that does make a big difference, but I really wish it had joined up. Maybe what we said earlier about the not having a minister leading this. We lose that, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. As I said, I think, I guess the reality is we have to keep, you know, as an as a country, you know, the key thing is to keep the lights on. Yeah, I absolutely get that. So supply side is important, but, you know, the reality is, you know, the old thing, you know, the best energy you can save is the, you know, is the pound you don't use or whatever it might be. I can't remember the phrase. It's fairly late in the day and my brain's a bit frazzled at my age, but
you've been driving all day.
But again, in terms of sort of certain schemes, I think, yeah, we've tried to insulate homes and stuff, and I think that's great, but that's sort of been in bits and pieces for me.
Yeah,
it's not been as joined up as it could be. You know, there's not been a regular thing, and it keeps changing every time. And certainly of the schemes, I think have had success. I think the whole idea of driving to net zero, I think that has caught more people's imagination. That whole sort of idea, the whole sort of drive to get to near net zero, I think is driven a lot more. As I said, I think there's some people genuine it. I think there's some people doing it for a bit of PR and some people trying to avoid doing it. But I guess the reality is that's the same in anything you do in life, I think.
Yeah. I've got two organisations that we're talking to, or three organisations. One's already started their net zero journey, and it's been focused on, I think that got triggered by the energy crisis, and they could see that if they focused on that now, that could bring the energy cost down. That's some significant increases You know, we're talking circa £2 million increase on their energy bill, which is a lot of money to start recovering. And then we had these other organisations. One organisation, they need to demonstrate their scopes 1 and 2 to organisations because they've been asked for it to trade, if you know what I mean. We're only going to buy your product if you can prove where you are in your carbon footprint process. So there's that's what's driving them. And then the other organization that I'm working with is pulling on the heartstrings. That's what they want to be doing is, you know, the managing director has said to me that he wants to leave the planet in the same place he had it when he arrived such. So for his children and his children's children. So you can see there's all these different approaches. Are you seeing that in the people that you talk to?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think, as I said, I think for me, you know, one, I don't know whether this could ever be possible, but maybe for the FTSE 500, you know, maybe all the chief execs have to have a very strong environmental element. Yeah, maybe they can legislate that they have to save 10% here. I'm trying to think of something very, you know, stupid off the top of my head, but the reality is, you know, if CEOs' bonuses were driven by a very strong environmental message, how much more would we be able to do? You know, end of day, whether the FTSE 250 or FTSE 500 organizations are the biggest spenders, perhaps not. I don't know, because, you know, again, you look at some of the supermarkets, might, you know, huge spenders or whatever. Yeah. But I think, you know, putting something in there, because I did see something maybe a couple of years ago, the FTSE 500, maybe only 5% or some small number had some sort of environmental targets as part of their bonuses. And I think, yeah, whether you could legislate that, whether legislation would be allowed, but I kind of think that, for me, that would be quite kind of a nice idea.
I wrote an article 2 years ago, and I was saying that only 20% of all the CEOs are actually doing anything about it. So it's 80% aren't really focused on it, which is this is 2 years ago. These figures were.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a lot of.
Yeah, there's not an awful lot of people there for doing it. So, you know, whether you did the FTSE 500 or the, you know, you could relatively quickly find out who the 500 biggest users of energy is. You know, I think, you know, we could all list most of those guys fairly quickly. So I think, you know, if you just said to them, right, as part of your targets, you have to have a very strong environmental message, and it's not just, you know, lip service. I think that's something that, you know, that might work. You never know. You never know.
And the new phrase of that is greenwashing, isn't it? So, Andy, what tell us about, you alluded that you're doing some software now. Tell us about that. Can you share that with us today, what you're working
sure.
on?
I mean, we do, as I said, the last 10 years I've been sort of around software. So it's very much around sort of energy management. So helping organisations identify where they can save money throughout their spend. So sort of simple stuff you can see on a building is the heating left on overnight, is the lighting left on overnight, you know, getting people to invest in things like sub-metering around the piece. So I've joined Viewpoint a few months ago. So they do a number of services around sort of trading, so helping trading teams identify and optimize their trading positions. Yeah, there's a lot of people still doing a lot of trading stuff and using spreadsheets to record everything. Yeah, this is a very simple one. It takes live feeds into there. You can see the trades. You can allocate the trades to different baskets. You can do what-if trades. You know, I mean, we work with a number of suppliers who take our product and sell it as a value add to their customer. So people like SSE, their product, which is Foresight, is our software that sits behind it. So I think there's some interesting stuff around that, and we've just launched bill validation as a service, which again is a service that's been around a number of years, but I think now with bill validation has had a bit of a renaissance, I guess, maybe for two reasons. One, with energy prices going up recently as to how they have been, you know, a 5-10% error is worth a lot more in terms of finding out than what it would have been. But I think also people are looking at ESG reporting And if you're going to, as a company or as a service provider, say that you've saved somebody 10% of their carbon or whatever number it might be, you know, it's very easy nowadays to do a freedom of information request. And I think if you say you've saved 10% and the figures aren't that, then it makes you look very, very poor. So making sure the bills, which therefore equal the energy management numbers, making sure they're accurate, you've got greater confidence that if you can say you've saved 10%, then you actually have saved 10%.
Yeah. I think the bill validation piece is very good because we had COVID, obviously, big excuse for energy management, and we should have seen it all going down. But what we were finding is the suppliers weren't actually enabling meter reading, for instance, with the non-smart meters. So we had a lot of meters in the portfolio out there not getting read. And what we're finding is their oven's still not getting red, okay? But when they are getting red, massive difference between what they were or could have been. Like, the estimation hasn't been done very well. So we've got a lot of estimated billing and a lot of differences between too much and too little as such. So there's some work to be done there. And we're finding that that's creating loads of disputes where I've got about probably 5 clients that I've had that with that's created that problem. Suppliers are unable to deal with the problem.
I mean, I understand the challenges. I mean, I think, you know, the data flows to get to a bill aren't the easiest. And, you know, if you've got a multi-site portfolio trying to get a bill out on a certain day, the suppliers are reliant on a number of other people to actually get them the data. But I think, you know, there are a lot of things. I mean, one of my previous companies, they did an estimate that some, like, only 81% of bills are that they analysed were accurate. Some might be relatively small errors. I think the biggest error they found was £15 million, which is, you could kind of hope that the supplier systems would have picked that one up. But
you would have liked to think that, yeah.
You would hope so. But as I say, I think for me, I've been talking to a number of suppliers and say, look, why don't you have your bills independently verified, you know, for relatively small pennies as to what it would cost? You squirt us the data, we validate it, so you can put on the bottom of your bills, our bills have been independently validated. I think All right. That would offer huge advantages to suppliers because somebody can say you've been checked, then you know, you hopefully will have less arguments, less rebilling, greater cash flow, happier customer. I think, go back to where we started. I think when I started in energy, it's like 98% of the bill was the actual fuel itself. And I can't remember the number now. It's sort of, you know, often
60-40 as such, isn't it? It's sort of like a split nowadays.
Yeah. And yeah, there's more and more Duos renewable obligation charges being added to a bill and stuff, and it, you know, it's becoming more and more, I guess, the more things you data you put in, the easier it is for a mistake to be made. And that's not for fraudulent reasons, just sort of by a simple error and stuff. So having a bill validation service, I think, is, you know, whilst it's arguably not the most exciting, I think, you know, finding errors is a key service to provide.
And I think it also takes the complexity away from it as well. If the client knew that you've got this pre-check that's been carried out, he can just focus on that bottom line, can't he? If he knows the rest of it's going to be within. So I would always say 5% out, we need to focus on it. But basically, you're going to get rid of that 5%. So that should be pretty much on the money for the cost. And if you've got good reads on the data, if the data's good, there should be no reason why. If you've got an estimated bill, then we're going to have issues there. We'll always have those issues. Would you then sort of, if you had an estimated bill, would you try and go and source more of an accurate reading? Or would that be part of the process?
Yeah, I mean, we can take, I mean, our platform, you can take, you know, to the manual reads if you want. So, you know, if a bill hasn't come in, you can input that, you know, the reading should be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it might be. So, you know, I think ours and, you know, other organizations' platform can take manual reads. I think, you know, again, you know, there's an awful lot of half hourly meters out there will account for an awful lot of the usage, but there's still an awful lot of readings out there that are still on non-half hourly, rely on manual reads and stuff. And I think, you know, the next drive to get more and more of the sort of local shops that are on non-half hourly onto half hourly drive, again, that's a great idea. But like all government initiatives on IT, whether it'll run to time and run to budget, I think we could argue probably not.
Just from the angle of the supplier here, not the end user, because I see yourself as the from the supply end, not demand. We split it into supply and demand. Where do you think the challenges are going forward? You know, we can discuss the likes of net zero, but where do you think the challenges are going forward?
For energy suppliers?
Yeah.
I think continuing to provide a service, and when I look at, who was it? Again, it's a long day. I think it was a supplier last year that did a huge sort of program done in partnership with National Grid, you know, to get people to turn their supplies off at, you know, 5 o'clock, between five and seven.
Was it Octopus?
There we go.
They done a lot of curtailment, didn't they?
So good. But again, I think, you know, certainly on the residential side, a lot of people go to the market once a year to, you know, U-Switch or whoever it might be and just, right, do that. But I think, you know, there are people who are interested. But I think, you know, if we've got the technology, you tick up and say, look, I'll allow Octopus or SSE or whoever it might be to do it. Then if they've got the thing, they can turn something down. You get 50 quid for doing nothing.
Yeah.
I think the reality is you get more people interested. I think if suppliers are sitting there waiting for somebody to turn the lights off or turn the dishwasher off, that's never ever going to happen in a month of Sundays. No. You know, I think if you've got the systems, you've got the capabilities to do stuff for them, people might get a smaller return because somebody else is doing the work. But I think, you know, if you've got 30 quid for turning, you know, for agreeing to be part of it rather than 50 quid, then yeah, it's still money at the end of the day. Yeah. And I think, you know, where there are suppliers now with tariffs at the weekend, you know, you get paid to use the energy and stuff. And I think, you know, I think for them, certainly on the residential side, you know, driving out and saying, look, this is what we can do for you and this is what we will do for you, you know, with the growth of EVs and PV and stuff, you know, having systems and platforms that can tell you when to charge or just actually do the charge up for you and stuff. I think, you know, that's where they need to get to. So I think, you know, the whole growth of data and AI and all that stuff, I think that's going to be massive going forward. I think there's a lot of concerns about AI, but I think where it's done correctly, I think it could add some real value.
I totally agree with that. I've been exploring AI, ChatGPT, but, you know, it has to be managed. You can't just put it in, walk away from it. We've got to be focused on that side of it. And, I interviewed James Brand, who's an AI specialist, a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, he was coming up with some really valid points of why we should embrace it, you know, and going forward, as long as the legislation's there to control it, because I think we can get carried away with it. But there's already been some horror stories around it. So we need to learn from them and just not get carried away, I think, and try and use it to our benefits rather than to cut corners.
No, I agree.
Process.
Yeah, I think there is, and I think, yeah, unfortunately, yeah, there's a number of drivers. You look at EVs. There's certain newspapers who love to find any bad stories about EV. I know them. You know them. I won't name them just in case they hear this. And
what? I'll let you know now. We don't know who gets to listen to this because it just goes out on Spotify. So. Anything could happen after this interview. I do try not to be political, but unfortunately, sometimes we do find ourselves.
No, but there are various papers. I mean, there's that fire at Luton Airport. I think within half an hour, there were stories out there from certain papers. It's an EV car that's exploded or whatever it might be. Yeah. In the reality, it wasn't an EV car, but it's an easy, cheap story. You know, again, on EVs, I think, yeah, there's a lot more work to be done. I think the technology is better. I think the infrastructure still needs a huge amount of work to get it going. And I think the reality is everybody likes the idea of an EV charger. But for me, where I live, you know, if they are going to be there, you'd like them on the street and stuff. You know, it would be ideal if you could charge them at home, because, you know.
I don't drive EV because I haven't got nowhere to plug it in.
Yeah.
And I only use the car probably once at a weekend and once on a Monday. And that's it. The rest of the week I'm on the train. For me to go and plug that in, I've got to drive probably 5 miles down the road. So that's some of the charge gone both ways, you know. And you know what? The one charger that I know where I could take it is Lidl's. And every time I go past it, there's a guy, there's a taxi driver sitting there reading the paper. And he seems to be, I don't know where he lives there. He may live out the car, I don't know. But there is some horror stories. But let's go back in time. Let's look at the horror stories around solar. Yeah, how many times have we seen solar in getting bad press because they've caught fire? How many times, you know, I installed some LEDs back in 2008. And they started getting a bit too hot. Well, that's the because quality is down here and cost is up here. It's the same for EV. That will come down. The infrastructure will be ready for it. Now, I remember buying LEDs back in, again, 2008. We had to pay up front and we had to wait 6 weeks before they come across from China or whatever. It's the same. It's the same story. When we always bring new technology out, there will always be the supply and demand issues that we'll have. And it will always be very expensive, but it won't be long before it becomes the norm, you know?
No, I think so. I think, yeah, if you look at the sort of battery technologies improving, the number of charging points is getting better. I think it's still a bit too piecemeal. There's some places and some councils who are doing a fantastic job, some probably less so. I think some of the car manufacturers are really pushing and trying to improve that. I think it's frustrating at a government level that we push the date back from 2030 to 2035 and said it's to help the cost of living, which frankly is a complete and utter load of nonsense. And it just sort of allows everybody an extra 5 years. You know, I think the reality is, if we don't push some of these targets, then it's just too easy just to say, well, I'll do it tomorrow and I'll do it tomorrow and I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah. I think the reality is that there has to be a burning bridge, a burning platform that people have to be on, have to be on.
And running out of space to stand.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that was just, that was just a very disappointing decision around the piece, but there we are. It is what it is, sadly.
But if you listen to the whole speech, we only got snippets of it. I actually sat through the whole speech recently. It's quite interesting when you listen to all the speech and the whole story. I'd recommend people to listen to that whole of that speech because slightly different perspective on it than what we actually see, the cuttings of it as such. Typical press thing, I think. Anyway, did say he wasn't going to get into the political world, but I'm defending the government. Anyway, and it's come to that time where I like to put my guests on the spot.
Yep.
And I don't know if you listen to any of my podcasts, but it's where I look for you to provide us with a takeaway. So we have a lot of energy experts listening to this, and they're on the transition into the energy sector regarding training, or they're already experts around the world. Is there anything you can give back to the industry today as a takeaway?
Yeah, I think for me, I guess having worked around data for the last 10 years, you know, if you're starting on your journey, just make sure you get some accurate data, but continually have a look at the data, review the data, look at what's going on within your building. You know, the number of companies who have a grand scheme of things, and then for 12 months there's a massive improvement, and then it fades away. But make people responsible for energy. You know, incentivize people to look at the energy space. You know, again, go back to the CEO level. Make sure the CEO has got a target around the environmental space. But you know, saving energy doesn't just happen in 12 months. It's an ongoing process. You're continually looking at new things. You know, if you generally want to be a green organization, maybe you have a lower return on, you know, a lower benchmark to get environmental projects through in terms of there around the piece. But I think, if you're just starting for, get some good energy as you're growing, start to do that, get people with greater responsibility, because it isn't a simple solution. Every building is different, every organization is different. But if you've got good data and understand where the energy usage, that for me is a great starting point.
Yeah. And I like the way you're sort of saying that, it's a journey. So we're all going to go on this journey. And now I always say that we need to take baby steps along that approach. We can't just go and make those massive savings there and then. It's like, oh, let's go and put solar on the roof. No, because if we do that within very quick period of time, we're going to find out that solar's too much, because we haven't looked at the low hanging fruit. So it is a journey. Data is paramount. We need that. Data is king, as I always say. You cannot manage what you don't measure. So we do need to start focusing on that.
Yeah, no, I agree. As Eddie, if you can get some easy wins, and often those easy wins might be able to pay for some of the investments. If you can save £100,000, and if you've got a positive organization, can you then reinvest that 100,000 in some more environmental projects? So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's all about the
Brilliant.
data for me.
Excellent. Well, Eddie, I'd like to say thank you for your time, and I do hope your
Thank you, Paul.
second part of your journey and tomorrow is a safe one. The weather is kind to you as well.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's been fabulous talking to you.
Brilliant. And you and your family stay safe in these times.
Thank you very much indeed.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Cheers, Paul.